Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackedSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into an off-season edition of Scrambled Eggs here on CrackSidewalks.com. We are your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast. Joe McCann and Phil Bush here with you. Phil, is summer going all right? I mean, summer's over, essentially.
Oh, yeah, don't tell me that. It got real chilly. I put a jacket on Sunday, so fall is in the air, apparently.
Yeah, I was actually in New Jersey, and it was chilly by my standards up there. It was like, got down into the 60s at night, and it was just breezy off the ocean, and so yeah. But now I'm back in Texas where it's 102, so I won't see a jacket again for like 4 months.
Well, that sounds like a real bummer.
Yeah. But anyway, we are here to talk Marquette basketball and give you just some latest thoughts, some updates on what's going on with the team as summer is winding down and school is starting up once again. Phil had actually put out just a tweet earlier, I guess last week, asking for your questions regarding Marquette basketball, and most of your questions were things we had planned on talking about anyway, Phil, so I thought I would just start with the questions and start running through them and get to what people want to know, and that will kind of drive the podcast, and that might get us to the end of the show.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, basically, it seems everyone was thinking the exact same things we were thinking, so yeah. Let's start with the simplest thing.
Charlie Hauser asked, biggest takeaway from the short foreign tour. So obviously the Marquette team went to Europe a few weeks ago. They went first to Spain and then to Paris. So they played three exhibition games against teams and players you've probably never heard of. They won all three for what it's worth. My short answer to that, Phil, is nothing. But at least because I'm not going to draw any huge conclusions one way or the other that this team is going to be great or terrible based on three box scores, the games we really weren't able to watch. But did you take anything away from what little we know about the foreign tour?
For content purposes, yes, I took lots away. For real life purposes, I took absolutely nothing away, other than the fact that I'm still stunned that we could somehow get the 2015 foreign tour streamed the whole time, but 2019, that was just right out, other than some Instagram stories. But whatever, I digress.
Well, international data is expensive.
Apparently it's gotten worse in 4 years. But I mean, I almost feel like can we say the takeaway is please don't take anything away from this tour? Simply because it was really just about like letting the players get out and run and get some extra practices and do whatever. The competition wasn't exactly rigid or very high level competition. I mean, I think the Paris All-Stars, they ran out of the gym by 40 or something like that. So it was barely a high level scrimmage in some instances. But I think it was good to see them out there and see what the players look like. But I would not jump to any conclusions.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's any conclusions, but there's certainly value to these foreign tours. Number one, you can start practicing earlier.
Oh, absolutely.
So that's good. And I think it's necessary for this team because, you know, just like every team in college basketball, there are guys on this team who have not played with the returning core yet in actual competition. So like Kobe McEwen, who had set out via transfer, Jace Johnson, who just transferred in, and then, of course, the freshmen. They all got to play with the guys who are returning from last year's team. So there's certainly value there. But with this team in particular, and I think this is, if I'm going to take away one thing, it was really that confirmation of something we have speculated about throughout the summer, Phil, since the Hausers transferred, is that the dynamic of this team is having to change. And Steve Wojciechowski said as much in, I guess, a short interview he had with Jeff Goodman and maybe a few others who texted him about the foreign tour, that the team is going to be playing more bigs, and just because this team does not have shooters, and we and others have kind of assumed that the dynamic would change a little bit. And I think if anything, the foreign tour did confirm that we are going to be seeing probably more of Ed Morrow and Theo John in the same lineup, or Jace Johnson with one of those two guys as well. So I don't know how I feel about that. It's definitely not the way the game of basketball is going with two bigs that don't have much range on the floor at the same time. But I guess that's something we're going to have to live with. What are your thoughts about a two-center lineup, which is really another question that we got from Patrick Leary. So and it just kind of I think a couple others asked that question too. But as we kind of transition to that next question in our little rundown here, what do you think about Marquette basically confirming that it is going to be running out two bigs most of the time this year?
I don't like it. Quite frankly, I'm not going to lie. I'm going to be surprised if they actually do run two bigs a lot of the time. A lot of the evidence for the two big theory is, one, yes, they did it at in the foreign tour, but they also only had eight, nine scholarship players at that point that they could run on, you know, and play. So you got to mix and match there. A lot of it seems to be predicated on Ed Morrow's interview when he first came to Marquette, saying he came he wanted to go somewhere where he could play the four instead of the five. So, I mean, in that sense, it makes sense that Morrow maybe plays the four, except you got to have some kind of range, and we still haven't seen him hit a shot outside 3 feet. Not to mention that when the ball gets down to him down low, it never leaves there unless it goes in the bucket or gets stolen. So I don't know. I guess that's probably, if I'm saying anything, that is my biggest concern for this team going into this next season is, does Wojo really think a two center lineup's going to go well? 'Cause I can't imagine it going.
Looking at it from the other way, I think most people, when they're thinking about a two-center lineup, they're thinking about it on the offensive end. What do you think about it on the defensive end? Like, obviously, Theo John can hold his own and more than hold his own at the five. He's probably going to be one of the best defensive big men in the Big East, if not the country, next year. But Ed Morrow defensively as a four, I would think he could guard stretch fours. What do you think about Ed as a four defensively?
I guess that's where I would be concerned, because that's where your depth really starts to disappear. Is can Ed guard physically? He can guard the four, stretch four, right? I think he could get out. I think he's got enough lateral movement. But Theo and Ed have trouble with fouls, and when you're trying to guard a jump shooter, is Ed going to get into foul trouble even more than he already would? That would be my concern on the defensive end. I think our rebounding would be like ridiculous, right? Like we'll call it if
they should get every rebound.
Yeah, they would get every single
all
rebound.
All the rebounds.
And maybe that's a strategy, right? Like force the other team to miss occasionally. We get the rebound and then collect our own rebounds every time. But I that's the only real positive I see out of the two center lineup.
And if they are in foul trouble, then I mean, that's why you have Jace Johnson.
Right.
Right. I mean, you have another big to run out there, but I'm interested to see if another player emerges as an undersized four to run out there with that rotation of bigs. I think the obvious one is probably Brennan Bailey, with Jamal Cain being another option there. Yeah, those guys by trade are not going to be fours, but I think both of them have the potential to contribute to this team as a four, because I think they both have some range, they both have length, and they both rebound pretty well, particularly Cain in limited minutes.
Yeah, and clearly Cain can guard on the perimeter and guard. You know, he might give up some size down low, but I think he'd do okay. I guess the question I would ask you, Joe, is, you know, if you had to peg a number, just say a percent of the time, how much do you think in Big East play, how much of a given game do you think we'll see the two center lineup?
I honestly, that's tough. Just because, first of all, it's going to be different centers between those three,
right.
But yeah, I think once you get to that point of the season, I would hope that Wojo would still want to have a perimeter-oriented team and have guys who can shoot out there. And if Bailey and Cain can prove that they can shoot, maybe he will go with a little bit more, a smaller lineup to have that kind of offense that he's used to. But at the same time, he's going to want his best players out there. To peg a number, I don't know, 40%?
Wow, that, yeah, I mean, You're very well maybe right. I mean, I guess I would. I'm just reacting in a shocked way to that because I was thinking if we're doing more than 25%, we're going to struggle. But I think your number is probably accurate when you look at the roster makeup. I mean, you got to run five guys out there, and you're going to have to put. You're going to want Morrow and Theo to get at least, if they can stay out of foul trouble, each of them's got to get at least, what, 25 minutes you'd want out of both of them a game?
At least. I mean, I'd love for Theo to play north of 30 right.
If he
can
could,
stay out of foul trouble. But, and you know, Jace is going to get his minutes. He didn't transfer here to play 5 minutes a game.
Right. You know, so
Jace is going to be out there.
Yeah. I don't know. What is a, let's assume Morrow and Theo are quote unquote starting, right? Morrow at the four, Theo at the five. Is it McEwen, Howard, and Sakar to play out the,
I think it's a lock to like those three are locks to
right,
start.
They have to be,
if
right.
you ask me. I mean, I would be shocked. I mean, obviously Marcus Howard is starting,
right? Well,
like
yeah.
110%
well,
starting.
He's playing 39 minutes a game, right? Barring foul trouble and injury.
Yeah, yeah. He, there's no doubt about that. And I think Sakar has put in his time, and I think you need his defensive presence at the three. I would be surprised if anybody took Sakar's starting spot. And that just leaves the other guard spot. And I think Kobe McEwen was just brought in to be that complimentary guard to Howard, take him off the ball a little bit and maybe distribute a little more. And with Greg Elliott hurt again, I just don't think there's much competition to take that starting spot from Kobe to start the season. And if it would be when Greg is healthy enough, if he's going to be able to pull minutes away from Kobe. So I think the starting lineup is essentially locked in. It's McEwen, it's Howard, it's Sakar, it's Morrow, and John. Now, I think it could be, it might flex a little bit as the season goes along, but I'd be surprised if that is not the starting lineup opening night.
Yeah, it's the most experienced one. It's going to be interesting. You know, Ben Schneider over at Anonymous Eagle wrote a really good article. You know, we're in the doldrums of the summer, but he kind of looked at the 2015 tour, foreign tour, and kind of tried to project, you know, what that you know, kind of the stats and what Wojo did from a roster lineup in that and how that projected into the 2015-16 season, and then use that as a reference to this foreign tour and what can we project forward. And it basically what it is, you know, one of the big conclusions was like the foreign tour, like as an example, Marcus Howard had like one game, he had like 12 assists or whatever like that. No one should expect that Marcus Howard is now a distributor like that. It was just he was taking the foreign tour to try and do different stuff. I would fall out of my podcast chair if McEwen had fewer assists than Marcus Howard, and that would also to me be an indicator of the team's not going to do well. If Marcus is assisting more than Kobe, I think we got a problem.
Yeah, this team is going nowhere with a passive Marcus Howard.
Correct.
Just shoot, man. Like, take that all-time scoring mark from Jarrell McNeil and just run away with it and put a mark that will never be touched.
Absolutely.
Because he's going to just shoot, and I am 100% okay with it. He can shoot all he wants. You know, we already talked about Kobe, but I guess that kind of leads me into the next question. Maybe we've already answered it a little bit, but Jim Carrey, not of Hollywood fame, but he asked, is Kobe McEwen the real deal? Early to say definitively, but I have no reason to believe that he will be a bust. I mean, he was certainly an outstanding player at Utah State. His three-point percentage may have me a little bit concerned because it dipped in his sophomore season at Utah State. It dipped down to 32% after a nice freshman season when he was at 41%. I mean, I'd love that percentage. So he's at 36% for his career, which is fine. I'm just hoping that dip was just, you know, an aberration. He's going to come back up, you know, north of 35% from three. But by all accounts, good defensively. Does turn it over, though, so that's a concern. I mean, this team has had its issues with turnovers in the past, but I mean, Kobe looks like a player to me from what little I've seen of him. What gut feeling do you have about Kobe McEwen so far?
I take it for a grain of salt, right? Like, there's always somebody. I remember last year when I went to the open scrimmage, I was raving about Brendan Bailey, and he certainly had his moments, but he wasn't the breakout star that I thought. But I think it's a little bit different when you're kind of projecting someone who's going into their, well, nominally their fourth year of college, and Kobe. You know, when I saw him live at the open scrimmage this season, and then from what I saw in the foreign tour, I think he's got all the tools to be that distributor for this team, can slash and kick. And definitely, you're right, his three-point shooting dipped in his sophomore year, but he is going to get plenty of shots. He should get open looks, right? Between Marcus, who they're going to have to guard out to 40 feet, and Sakar in the corner, or Sakar as a slasher, Kobe should get looks on the perimeter, especially if we're playing two centers and they have to respect those centers down low. Kobe's going to get open looks, and I hope he reverts to freshman year form and can hit it a good clip, because that's going to be key, right? Like, Kobe's going to have to be the straw that stirs the drink. He's going to have to make his 3-point shots, and he's going to have to distribute. And if he doesn't do those things, if we have a second coming of Joe Chartouni, we're right back where we were last year, if not worse.
Yeah, I'm hesitant to say that he's going to get a lot of open looks, because I guess that depends how Marquette's going to run its offense. Because if you've got either Morrow or John hanging around the arc, well, obviously you're going to help off him, and so maybe he might not get as many open looks. But if you're going to have two guys just hanging out close to the paint, then maybe the guys might not help off them as much, out of fear of them getting the ball down low and getting easy buckets. But I guess it depends on how the offense will be structured with fewer shooters on the floor. Because I guess as it is, I guess Sakar has shown an ability to hit the 3-point shot. Maybe not all the time, but he has definitely had his games where he's been pretty deadly. So I guess teams are going to have to respect it. But it's not like Marquette's going to be full of shooters and there's just going to be too many to cover. I mean, as the season begins, I think most teams are going to approach it as Marquette has exactly one shooter, and let's see if the others can prove us wrong.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably right, and it'll be interesting, like you said. This will be a very interesting kind of judgment on Wojo the coach, right? As an ability to coach offense, because to your point, if you've got Theo and you've got Ed, and if we're running a lot of ball screens with them setting screens, are they going to be rolling simultaneously? Are they going to be clogging the lane? How, do you force people to play them one-on-one in the post, and then they can can they pass out to the perimeter where maybe the players get an open look? It's going to be really, this offense is not going to look like anything that we've seen at Marquette in, since the Crean days. Even like I'm just trying to wrap my head around what this offense is going to look like with the collection of parts that we have.
I don't know. Maybe it might look somewhat similar to Wojo's first team.
Yeah, that could be.
Were there any shooters on that? I mean, that team didn't exactly have a ton of shooters.
There was Carlino. Yeah. And then.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, there was Carlino. Who else? Let me see. I'm trying to think back to exactly the roster structure that first year. I guess they did maybe. Yeah, not that many. I mean, Dwayne Wilson, I guess, was the second best shooter on the team at 35%.
I tell you who wasn't a shooter for that team. Derek Wilson.
Yeah, Derek was not a shooter at all. But that team also did not run two bigs out there all the time,
right?
Either.
There weren't two bigs on the roster to run out there.
Yeah, it was just poor Luke Fisher. It was all on him to do everything. That was a tough season. But yeah, but to your point, yes, this offense will be unique. And I guess the foreign tour, even though we weren't actually able to watch the games, we at least got an idea of, that's what the team's going to look like. So yeah, we'll just have to wait and see what it looks like against, American teams and Big East teams, and that's coming up sooner than we think. So that'll be coming up in a little bit. On that note, Phil, we're going to go to Alan Bukowski's question. What is this team's ceiling?
That's a tough one. Because, again, there's a lot of good pieces. I will say, with the caveats, assuming Greg Elliott comes back healthy and stays healthy, and Marcus Howard stays healthy, I think this team's ceiling is probably a top two finish in the Big East. I'm not ready to say top one yet until I see what's coming back for the Big East and see what Wojo can actually do with this. But I think the ceiling right now is a top two Big East finish.
Yeah, I think, well, when you're going, what is the definition of a ceiling? That means the highest this team can possibly go, not necessarily my expectations for the team.
Yeah, and that's...
The highest this team could possibly go is the Big East champions. That, I think, if everything goes right, if Marcus Howard has an All-American season, if Kobe McEwen is better than advertised, and somehow this two-big lineup works, yeah, they can win the Big East.
Yeah,
if
okay.
Maybe Villanova's talent, as good as it is, it proves to be too young, and maybe they get tripped up a few times in Big East play. Yeah, that's the ceiling. Now, that is not my expectation, because I'm skeptical about Marquette's lack of shooting. I'm skeptical about bigs. Villanova is still Villanova, and the rest of the Big East returns a lot. So if I'm talking expectations, I'm probably thinking 3, 4, 5 in the Big East, somewhere in that range. But ceiling, the best, absolute best this team could do, sure, I'll say Big East champs is the ceiling.
So would you? So then you're putting their ceiling in, again, top 10 in the country? I mean, if I
well, when you put it that way,
I mean, when you think about it, if they're Big East champs,
yeah, I guess we're talking about as good as they can possibly be. Now, again, not my expectations, but yeah, because you would hope an experienced team could get a bunch of wins and really climb up in the rankings and get a high seed. Sure.
I don't know. It's weird. Like, it's like the summer has sucked my optimistic particles out of my brain
right. The ceiling before,
but it's just I'm having trouble wrapping my head around it with as many unknowns. But yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, I mean, the ceiling before was a Final Four team.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, and so now you lose those two guys, and so maybe you knock the ceiling down a peg. So I would say this team's not going to get close to a Final Four, but yeah, could they? If it's as good as it could possibly be, with Howard having the type of senior season that people like Buddy Hield had, right?
Or Carson Edwards,
where he is like an All-American and. I mean, close to an All-American last year. He's second team. He's a preseason first team, I think, by a lot of people's estimation so far, even though those lists aren't officially out. I think some of those way too early lists have him as a preseason All-American because he is easily, probably along with Cassius Winston, one of the top two returning players in college basketball. And so when you have a guy like that on your team and you have an experienced group around him, and I think the team is going to be good enough defensively to be consistently a ranked team. Now the question is the offense going to be good enough consistently to be a ranked team? But yeah, when you're talking ceiling, as good as it can possibly be, sure. That would be way up there. I just have so many question marks to say that would be my expectation for this
team. Yeah, you know what's crazy to think is if this team is, you know, plays to that ceiling, which you've convinced me, I agree. Does that mean that the Hauser brothers get entered into Ewing theory?
I'll say this. Even though, if you're asking me on the record, is this team better or worse without the Housers? They're worse. That's easy for me to say. But if this team somehow wins a Big East championship, goes deep in the tournament without those guys, it would say something about the team chemistry without them, and it would be hard to ignore it.
Correct. If there's some glitch in the matrix and Wojo hits on some turning away from the trend of space and pace and just the right collection of talent and they go deep in the tournament, you kind of have to, and especially with the way the season ended.
I say that, but there could be other ways it could go. Like if for some reason in college basketball there's a shift and defensive oriented teams are suddenly better than perimeter oriented teams, or I say that it's kind of that way in some respects in the past, because Virginia was one of the best defensive teams ever, particularly in the KenPom era. And so if this team becomes an elite defensive team, maybe they get to a well, I can say Final Four, but they get to a Big East championship on their defense, then we could kind of say maybe losing the Housers, maybe the team isn't better offensively, but they were better defensively, and they found a way to do it. So, yeah, I guess there are other ways to look at this team potentially being better without the Housers, but if you're asking me are they better or worse, right now I'm definitely putting my chips on worse, and we'll just see if I'm wrong.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. That's not a hill we need to go die on. But, yeah, I mean, the ceiling is a Big Ten championship, or Big East championship. I just
How dare you?
Yeah, that was – whew, my Freudian slip is showing. But, yeah, that's going to be – it's going to be interesting to see, because it is really going to take some sort of offensive genius to make this work, in my opinion.
Yeah, I hope Bojo has that in him. So let's move on to another question, maybe getting a little on the fun side here. From Anonymous Eagle, please elaborate on your base emotions about intentionally allowing Mick Cronin into Fiserv Forum. This is in reference to the news, if you have not heard it, hopefully you have by now, that Marquette is going to do a home-and-home with UCLA starting next season. So in the 2021 season, Marquette goes out to Pauley Pavilion, and then in the 21-22 season, UCLA will be coming to Milwaukee. That's pretty awesome. I mean, that's one heck of a home-and-home with a prestigious program that's always going to recruit well, no matter who the coach is. My thoughts on Mick Cronin coming back, I mean, that guy can go pound sand, first of all, and I hope Marquette sweeps this little two-game home-and-home with UCLA over the next couple of years, although that may be easier said than done. But we'll answer the Mick Cronin part, then I have another UCLA question before I get to...
Mick Cronin, I mean, first of all, the dude might have an aneurysm between now and then. Not to make light of a medical situation, but my God, the how the guy's head has not exploded so far is a minor medical miracle. I don't feel great about having him back, but who knows? Maybe he'll UCLA seems to be very win now and has super high expectations. I don't know that Mick is going to turn that program around, especially considering he was, what, their 13th choice?
See, here's the funny thing. By the time we get to the Milwaukee part of this home and home, it's not 100% guaranteed Mick's going to be the coach.
Correct. That's what I'm saying.
If this thing goes as poorly as some of the skeptics think it will, I mean – for a guy as thin-skinned as Mick Cronin with expectations that they have at UCLA, that would be a heck of a buyout, but they've proven they're willing to pay it with past coaches. But we'll see how he does. He's recruiting pro. He actually got a commitment from a guy Marquette was after, Dacian Nix, who's a five-star guard from Nevada. Actually, from Alaska. He's playing in Nevada now, but he got him, so Marquette has to face him next season. But, yeah, Mick Cronin was one of the odd fits in the coaching carousel this offseason. We'll see how he does, but I'm skeptical about his temperament in the Los Angeles environment.
Yeah, I agree. But, I mean, I will say in a sick, twisted way, welcoming him into the Fiserv Forum and getting a chance to just absolutely deride him during that game, that's going to be sneaky kind of fun. Like, you know, like every time he has one of his antics or tirades on the sideline, it's going to be fun to boo him and stuff like that. It'll be good. It's a little bit of the old Big East, you know, kind of feel to it, right? Like that might be a physical, physical set of games and just I don't want to – pure unadulterated hatred in the sports sense. Like I think it's going to be fun. So
That's the thing. Like Marquette and UCLA, I don't think they've played since like the days of Al McGuire.
Right, which is
the date was out.
What's going to be so amazing about those games is like the historical perspective and like the old school uniforms. You know what I mean? Like that's going to bring eyeballs alone. Is just going to kind of be the historic treatment, if you will, of those games. It'll make it at least interesting for non-conference games, I think.
Yeah, so I can't say I'm too optimistic about going there next year without Marcus Howard and getting a win, but yeah, we'll see what the teams look like this time a year from now and then 2 years from now when we get the return trip to Milwaukee. The other thing I wanted to bounce off of you while we're on the topic of this UCLA home and home, and some people have kind of commented about this on the message boards and social media, because obviously next year Connecticut comes into the Big East, which means a 20-game conference schedule, which means fewer non-conference games. with this game on the schedule, some people are wondering how this affects the rest of Marquette's non-conference schedule going forward, including some fearing the possibility that the Wisconsin series may be in jeopardy because of the conflicts with both those teams playing 20-game league schedules now, and the UCLA game is in a slot where Marquette normally has played Wisconsin in the past. Now they're playing Wisconsin earlier in the season next year. Thoughts on that, Phil, and how this UCLA home-and-home may affect non-conference
schedule?
Well,
I mean, the UCLA game and then, in theory, the Wisconsin game are the only given games for the non-conference next year, right? The Kansas State series is over. I'm not even sure we...
But there is still a Big East Big 12 challenge, and there's still the Gavitt games.
Okay. Is there a Big East Big 12 challenge?
Yeah, that Marquette-Kansas State is part of that this year.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Like, the Marquette-Kansas State thing was started without the Big East Big 12 challenge, but once that became a thing, they said, by the way, Marquette's Kansas State game, that counts as part of Big East Big 12. So, in all likelihood, Marquette will be playing a different Big 12 team starting in that 2021 season.
Yeah, so we've got a couple of games, but not a ton. I do think... I don't think the Wisconsin game's at risk because at worst case, I would suspect that they would do it as a Gavitt game to take that slot.
Yeah, I think that would be not – like if there is any jeopardy there, they could just ask the Gavitt committee or whoever does that, say, hey, look, we're having trouble fitting Wisconsin into our schedule. Could you make that our Gavitt game?
Right.
But I would hate for the Wisconsin – I think most people would hate for the Wisconsin game to go away as much as we dislike Wisconsin. And yeah, like Wisconsin fans don't care for Marquette. I mean – we love our rivalry games. We love to beat our rivals. Like, it's no fun hating your rival if you never play them. Like, with Notre Dame, I mean, Marquette and Notre Dame, there's nothing to really dislike because we haven't played since the Big East broke up. I mean, look at, like, Kansas and Missouri. Those two schools hated each other, but they haven't played since the Big 12, you know, the whole realignment thing. So there's just no rivalry to speak of. So there's not much hate there except to just, you know, cheering when the other one loses to somebody else. So you don't want your rivalry games to go away, and I hope the Wisconsin game is not in any type of jeopardy. Marquette has not said anything about that. This is just pure fan speculation. But I hope that at all costs, Marquette can preserve the Wisconsin rivalry, and because that game should absolutely be played every year.
Well, that game won't go away because financially it's the game that's going to – it's a guaranteed sellout, whether you're at the Cole Hole or you're playing at the Fiserv. That game will sell out. So there's no reason not to put that on the schedule. If it has to be early, if it has to be a Gavitt game, what have you. I feel I would wager a large sum of money or one of Eric Gebbie's houses, Gebbert's houses on that Wisconsin game being played every year, no matter what.
Well, if it's you're betting Eric's house on it, then I feel good
right about
it.
I mean, if nothing says confidence like betting someone else's house on an outcome.
All right. So hopefully there's no jeopardy with, but it is something to monitor.
Absolutely.
As we learn more about future schedules and future Gavitt games, Big 12, Big East things, whatever exempt tournaments Marquette's going to be in. If you know, still hoping for that Bahamas trip. Some point
that would be great.
Get that. We need that
well,
to happen.
Wait, that is so they do have the whatever tournament up in Connecticut this coming year, or not this year. The in that 2021
the following season,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So they have that, but yeah, it would be great to have. Great to have somewhere else, but we'll see.
Yeah. So, last question I'll take from the Twitter sphere. Justin Dubes just asked, any recruiting updates since the last time we spoke? I think the Justin Lewis commitment happened after our last podcast.
It did.
So we'll just touch on Justin Lewis. He is a four-star guy who's on the rise. He is from Baltimore. He's a power forward. He has worked out with USA – not worked out. I mean, he's been on Team USA, the USA junior national team. So – you know, for whatever you think of recruiting rankings, the guys who make those USA basketball teams generally are pretty highly thought of in their class. I think Marcus Howard, I know Marcus Howard made a number of USA basketball junior national teams when he was in high school. So USA basketball evaluates this guy very highly. Looks like he's got some length, looks like he's got a little bit of range. I think he's very highly thought of amongst like other guys in his class because those guys who have played with him on USA basketball are some of the best guys of the country. They have generally good things to say about him. So it's a good start to the an important 2020 recruiting class for Wojo to get Justin Lewis on board, because it helps when you already have a top 100 guy committed. You can go to these other recruits that you were recruiting, and Marquette is still involved with a lot of them. I'll touch on some of those in a minute. But, Phil, from what little you, I don't know how much you've looked into him, if you've seen his mixtape or read about him, any thoughts on Justin Lewis getting the 2020 class going for Marquette?
No, I think it's a great foundational piece. That, along with, you know, Samir Torrance reclassified, otherwise he would be a 2020 recruit as well. So I think it's a good young core. I think Justin Lewis is perhaps that answer at the stretch four, right? I think that's where, not maybe not as a freshman, but I think that's where he slots up. And anytime you can get good long talent, that's what you're looking for. So I think that's a really, really good get, and it should allay some of the fears of the folks out there that, you know, Wojo's seat is hot and maybe recruits stay away, because that's not a piece you get if recruits are concerned about Wojo not being there.
And if you can build a strong recruiting class, that helps the old job security too. So
absolutely,
it's important for Wojo in that regard. Some other guys that maybe that Marquette has been after, I mean, they missed out on a few. I mean, you're not going to get them all, but Namari Burnett, he's a five-star guy from Chicago. He's playing out at Prolific Prep in Napa this season. He cut Marquette from his final five. DJ Stewart, he's a guard from Chicago as well. He has listed a top eight. Marquette did not make that one. He took an unofficial to Milwaukee earlier this summer. Dane Danger was a guy Marquette was involved in. He's from Minnesota. He committed to Baylor, so they're out on him. Sharif Abdur-Rahim's son, Jabri, they were really close with him, actually. They were in his top 10, maybe, something like that. But no, he's got his list down to two. Marquette is not there. And I mentioned Dacian Nix earlier. Now, that was a guy Marquette was really close with. Dacian Nix was interesting because he listed a top five earlier this in August. And like, when he listed his top five, he said, "I left about some really good schools, including Marquette." So he at least gave Marquette a shout, kind of like, thanks for the effort, but you're not my school. So he listed his top five, listed some official visits, and then committed to UCLA the next day.
Oh, great.
So we listed a top five and said, we're going to take some official visits to figure this out, and then committed to UCLA a day later. So that was Mick Cronin's first big one. But that was one of the big five-star, like, home run recruits that would, like, change the recruiting class, much the way Henry Ellenson did when he committed, and much the way that when Marquette was involved with Quentin Grimes and I'm blanking the kid that ended up in Arizona last year, redheaded kid.
Oh, Nico
Mannion. When Nico Mannion, like, when Marquette was in his top two, like, if they had gotten him, that's just kind of it's just such a huge boom in recruiting. They didn't get those guys, but that's what Dacian Nix would have been if they got him. There's one guy left that Marquette is in on that would be that kind of huge home run guy, and that's Jalen Suggs. That's a guy they have been recruiting for a long time, like, maybe since he was in ninth grade, maybe even eighth grade. He's a guy from Minnesota. A lot of people seem to think he's going to go to Gonzaga. An interesting thing about Jalen Suggs, he's also a four-star prospect in football. And he has said he's committed to basketball, but he hasn't 100% said he is giving up football. Like, he's kind of like hinted that in the right situation, he might do both in college, but he's going to play basketball 100%. So it's interesting that he has Gonzaga and Marquette, two schools without football, like, in his top, whatever, 5-10 that he's got listed. I think Iowa, strangely enough, is one of the teams he's got way up there.
But his top,
for a five-star guy, a guy who's likely going to be an All-American, he does not have the list you would normally expect of Duke, Kansas, Kentucky, Villanova.
Yeah.
He's got Gonzaga, he's got Marquette, and maybe a few others that you wouldn't normally expect. Minnesota, I think, is still in the mix for him. But Jalen Suggs is the last, like, home run, like, landscape-shifting recruit for Marquette in this class. Now, there's some other good guys, don't get me wrong. I feel like I'm running on and on talking about recruits without you getting a word in here, Phil, but I'm just kind of going off this list that one of the guys from Big East Coast Bias puts out every week, and it's a lot of guys. Got a lot of good information. Another guy that Marquette is doing very well with, in good position with, is Dawson Garcia. He's borderline five-star guy out of Minnesota. He's a 6'11 kid. He's a center. Keep an eye on him because I think they're going to be really close with him. A.J. Hoggard is a guard out of Pennsylvania. He's going to play at Huntington Prep this season. That's a really good high school program if you haven't heard of them. Andrew Wiggins, among other guys, has gone there. I think he's actually coming on an unofficial visit in the relatively near future. And then they got a few more guys that they are really pretty close on. I'm going to butcher this guy's name, but he's from Phoenix, Arizona. Osasere Igodaro. He's a 6'9 forward out of Phoenix. So that's kind of the part of the country where Stan Johnson, that's kind of his wheelhouse. So he's probably a guy I think Stan has been doing very well with. Jamari Sibley, he's a guy from Milwaukee, from Nicolet High School. He's got Marquette in his top 10. And then Miles Stute, he goes to Gonzaga College High School in D.C. He has Marquette in his top 7. So those are some guys Marquette's kind of closing in on, but not necessarily imminent a recruitment from either one of them. I don't know if you want to give any thoughts on any recruits in particular, Phil, or just maybe any general thoughts on what you want to see from this class. Because Marquette has a few open scholarships now. I think they're up to 5 available for next season with the guys who are graduating, plus Ike Eke's career ending, which we can touch on here tomorrow.
Yeah, I think they're going to need guards. You know, Marcus is going to be a big hole to fill, and so is Sakar, right? So there's starter minutes right there, and you're hoping you've got the fillers in, you know, from a starting perspective on the roster now, and maybe Samir Torrens, Greg Elliott, Dexter Akano. But you're going to need some bench depth at guard to be sure, and you probably need to pick up at least one pure point guard. And then you got to.
Yeah, that's why Jalen Suggs is the one to watch. Like, I kind of like in the past with Quentin Grimes and Nico Mannion, I try not to get too excited about these guys, that these like five-star top 10 prospects, because they Marquette, despite their best efforts, rarely gets those guys. But they're just in such good position with Jalen Suggs, I wouldn't rule it out. So he's the one to watch. If they get him, this recruiting class could really get rolling. Like he and Garcia are the two guys that could really like shoot Marquette up in the recruiting rankings. But yeah, I agree that with you, Phil, that a dynamic guard is something Marquette's really going to need in this class.
Yeah, absolutely. And then you got to pick up somewhere along the way the heir apparent to Theo John, right? The rim protector, rebounding, fan favorite type of player, if you will.
Garcia, he's not like thick like Theo John is, so he's not the same type of player. But I mean, he's a very talented big. So he wouldn't fill the role in that he's like the same type of player as Theo, but as far as having a very talented big man, he would be that.
Right. And so I think they got the right rosters now, or the right makeup in the pipeline. It's really just going to be a question of can they close. Do you think, you know, I know we've talked about Suggs a lot, but do you think he's a must get for the state of where the roster and this staff's
at? I would say he's a must get because that kind of implies that the team is totally screwed if they don't get him.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to call him a must get. I'm going to call him a grand slam if they
do. But I think not getting him puts a lot of pressure, maybe not on the 2021 season, but puts a lot of pressure on, say, the 21-22 recruiting class and stuff like that. Because you've got to get a point guard onto this roster because, I mean, we haven't seen yet. I mean, Kobe McEwen will be a senior next year. Elliott, we think, can play point guard, but he would be technically a junior at that point, and we're not sure he can play point guard, right? So there's not necessarily a fixed point guard on the roster beyond next season. So you gotta, I mean, maybe Samir Torrens can do it, but we'll see. But there's no sure things. Let's leave it at that.
Yeah, I'm. While you were talking, I was trying to get like the latest recruiting update from Jalen Suggs. You know, for what it's worth, on Adam Zagoria's blog, if you know him, he's like a basketball writer out of the New York area. In June, he said, and I'm quoting from Adam's article here, "I would say it's between Gonzaga, Minnesota, and Marquette. Those are the three front runners. Those are the schools I'm closest with, have the best relationships with."
Well, let's hope Richard Pitino doesn't drop one of those bags.
And see, the thing is, like, Minnesota's in, like, kind of in there because that would be a place where if he does it, he might do two sports.
Yeah.
Because, again, he's got a – like, I was, like, just scanning his Twitter feed. For what it's worth, he's got an interest in football from, like, Georgia and Notre Dame, like, Michigan State. Like, he's a really good football player, and he could do that at the next level if he wants to, but he's just so much better in basketball. But, again, scanning some of the latest news on him, Michigan is involved. It's a, like, he hasn't necessarily cut the likes of Kansas or Michigan State or anybody, but he's just saying the schools that are really close with him, it's Gonzaga, Minnesota, and Marquette.
Interesting.
That's not an official top three. Those are just schools that are working really hard. Again, keep an eye on Jalen Suggs. I'm keeping an eye on him. Not saying they're getting them, but I'm also not saying they're not getting them.
So curious, like, I know that if you play an Olympic sport and you play, you know, basketball or football, the primary sport is basketball or football from a scholarship standpoint. But I've never seen someone play both basketball and football. Which sport would your scholarship count against? Like, so the reason I ask is, like, could Georgia
guys have done it,
because,
like, Julius Peppers did it. Charlie Ward did it.
Oh, that's true.
But I'm trying to think recently. I can't think of anybody recently who did it. But yeah, that's a good question. I don't know. I would guess football because they got so many to spare.
Right. Yeah. I don't know which one you get to pick or choose. Would he count against a basketball scholarship or a football scholarship? Because God help us.
Most Division I football teams have scholarships left over. Right. Like, very few of them fill every scholarship. So I would guess he would probably count for football and throw the basketball team a bone, and so they could fill an extra, because, you know, basketball teams are always trying to find a way to fill that roster up and get as many scholarship players on the roster as possible.
Right,
so
that would be interesting.
That would be my guess. But yeah, I'm trying to think of the, I'm sure there's somebody that I'm totally forgetting, but I'm trying to think of the last, you know, Division I athlete to play both football and
Greg
basketball.
Greg Paulus did he?
I'm sorry?
Greg Paulus, did he play both?
Not at the same time. Not at the same time. He played 4 years of basketball at Duke and played 1 year of football at Syracuse, but he did not play both at the same time.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll have to turn that over to our research department and see if they can figure it out.
Yes. Anybody on Twitter, you know, if you just hit us up, somebody recently at the higher the level, you know, Power 5, Power 6 school that played football and basketball at the same school. There are some guys who have said they would do it, like Terrell Pryor said he might do it, but Terrell Pryor gave up basketball, of course. But this is something I should probably know, but I can't think of anybody.
All right, so Twitter, come to our aid. Somebody within the last 10 years that has played both basketball and football. Go.
All right, hit us up. One thing I did mention briefly that I do want to touch on, and it was kind of a bummer, but, you know, it's just the way it is, and it's not totally unexpected news that Ike Eke had to medically retire from the Marquette basketball team. And this is something we'd kind of hinted at on the podcast in the past, Phil. You know, not sure what his future held, because you're talking about a 6'10 kid who's had two back injuries. He's had his, you know, back surgery. It's just so much, you know, to come back from, to play at a Division I level. Like, hopefully his everyday life is fine, but as far as being able to play high major college basketball, it doesn't appear his body's going to allow him to do that. I'm heartbroken for the kid from that perspective. Now, don't feel terrible for him overall, because Marquette is still honoring his scholarship financially, so he's going to get a degree from Marquette University. He will still be able to hang out with the team. I'm sure he'll be on the bench for every game. He is still a part of the team officially. Really, all this means is, if you're not familiar with the whole medical retirement thing, is that financially his scholarship is still honored. As far as Marquette's official scholarship count, that scholarship is now available for Steve Wojciechowski to use on another player.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate for Ike. We wish him the best, and you know, it's disappointing that he didn't get a chance to show what he could do. You know, on the positive side is whatever's going on, hopefully he mends enough from his back injuries, but getting those covered by Marquette and getting an education, you know, a college degree from Marquette, I think it will be a sad positive, but a positive nonetheless for him.
Yeah, it seems like this is great too. There was a great article over the summer about him, like, saving his own money and helping build basketball courts and send basketball supplies back to Nigeria.
Yes,
which is where his family is from. Just a great kid, great story, and I'm sure he'll do good things with his life with that Marquette degree, and I'm sure he'll be an inspirational guy on the sideline, always cheering on his teammates going forward. But, you know, I hate he never got a chance to shine on the basketball court with Marquette. And, you know, he was it last summer that he set the program's vertical reach record? There, that video yes. that went around last year. That thing they jump and they tap to see what your vertical reach is, and he tapped that, get like the very top of it, and the whole team went crazy. So athletically, he had all types of potential to be a very good college basketball player. Just unfortunately, his body was not going to let that allow him to reach that potential. But by all accounts, a great kid and a hard worker. So I just hate that his basketball career is over. But he'll still be a part of the team for the next couple years while he gets his degree. So
yeah.
We'll miss him. But I the flip side is now that scholarship is available, so Wojo can continue to work on that 2020 class.
Yeah, and so he did quote unquote stash the scholarship for the year. It was announced by Ben Steele that Tommy Gardner, who is a walk on, he's a sophomore, I believe, a walk on. Last year has now gotten the scholarship for this year. Again, everyone should be reminded that athletic scholarships at the college level are renewed year over year. It's not a here's your 4-year scholarship. You get it year to year, and nominally everyone renews it. So basically, Gardner and depending on what happens with the recruiting class, maybe gets another one. But he gets a scholarship for a year that he gets his tuition paid for. Since we have that extra scholarship.
It's cool for him. It's nice that Woodrow's able to, reward a walk-on who's worked hard for him, and he doesn't have to pay for anything this year. So good for him, and he can go on the road with the team and all that.
Yep,
so.
And he's a throwback to David Diggs. He's a basketball player on scholarship, getting an engineering degree. So good for him.
Very good, very good. Hey, one more shout-out I want to get out of here with, Phil. I know it's a little dated at this point, but I'd be remiss if I did not give a hearty congratulations to Golden Eagles alumni and the TBT. I know we all really enjoyed following that team. I was so bummed for them when they lost in the final to that Ohio State alumni team. But, man, that team was so fun to watch, and they were just a few plays away from cashing in on a $2 million prize. But that team was truly enjoyable. It was Travis Diener hitting that shot to send him to the final. If you guys missed that, I don't know where you've been, but man, I really enjoyed watching that team. I just want to give them a congratulations and a thank you for entertaining us over the summer, because I do enjoy watching that tournament.
Yeah, that was great. It really did. I don't know that I've been. I mean, even this season, this Marquette season, I kind of saw some of it coming in the Big East tournament, and certainly the Murray State game, like it just was deflated from the get-go. But the way that last minute in the Elam ending went for Marquette, that was really deflating, because that team had gotten me so jacked for the tournament, and they were so fun to watch and dynamic, and it wasn't just one player. Dwight Bikes was early in the tournament, was just lights out, and then Diener stepped up, and Jamil Wilson stepped up, and so there was a lot of various players on that team that just made that team really, really brought me joy. We'll say that.
There we go.
Yeah, finally got there. And, hey, Joe Chapman, heck of a coach maybe.
Yeah, he did a really good job with that team. Just the rotations he used, the lineups he used, they all worked. And just did a great job with that team. We'll see how many of those guys continue to come back and play. And I just watching that tournament, Dwight Bikes and Jamil Wilson are always two of the best guys in that tournament. I would love to see them get another shot in the NBA. I don't know if they will at their age. That's just the way it goes, because NBA teams, when they're looking to fill out their rosters for that 11th, 12th, 13th spot on the roster, usually that goes to some 21, 22-year-old kid that they think they can still develop. If you get in your mid to late 20s, most of those guys, they're going to make their money overseas. But, hey, if they get another shot in the NBA, I'd love to see it, because, it's easier for us to watch them here than keep up with them, see what's going on overseas. But I know Travis Diener's got one more season overseas that I think he said he's probably going to retire after this upcoming season. But he still got it, man. And a lot of those guys still do. The thing I love about Marquette in this tournament, there's so much depth in Marquette as far as good pros who are not in the NBA, that they should be able to put a pretty good team in this thing year after year, even if they get to the point where guys like Diener and Jarrell McNeil or even Bikes or Jamil Wilson don't want to do it anymore or can't do it anymore because they are with NBA teams. But They are deep roster because, I mean, there are still guys out there like, you know, Dwayne Wilson. I saw he was working out with the team this year. He wasn't on the roster, but that's a guy you could bring on the roster. Marcus Howard may be available for this team down the road. Sakar, a lot of the guys who are about to graduate. Devontae Gardner is out there somewhere. He's been in this team in the past, wasn't able to do it this past year. There's just so many good pros that Marquette has produced that are doing well overseas. You just don't hear about them because obviously they're not in a place where we could watch them or really keep up with them other than maybe an occasional tweet on or on post on social media. But Marquette's potential TBT roster is very deep, so I think they'll be a player in this thing for a while.
I'm looking forward to it. It's something to help make the summer go by from a sports perspective.
It gives me just a great Marquette fix in the middle of July, and then by the time it's over, it can kind of cool down, maybe look at a few recruiting notes, and then all of a sudden, you know, college basketball season really gets cranked up. We should be seeing the Big East schedule come out pretty soon. I guess that's what we'll touch on our next podcast whenever we do it. So that usually comes up after Labor Day, I want to say.
It should.
So we should be seeing the
next 2 weeks
Big East schedule pretty soon. And then when we do that, maybe we'll do another pod and kind of go through the schedule, start to finish, what we think about this upcoming season. Is there any other questions, anything we didn't touch on, Phil, that you think we should get in before we get out of here?
I don't want to talk about water in a basketball and how that changes out of timeout plays.
Sorry, Ben Snyder. It was a very interesting question that you posed, but I just don't know where that question came from. Like, water in a basketball. I guess I'll just say my quick thoughts. It would be very tricky, and passing or shooting would almost go out the window. You just got to get layups and pass the ball well.
Yeah, I mean, Theo John would pretty much be the only one that could lift it and dunk it. So, I mean, maybe we'd have the advantage there. But either way, it was a dumb question.
Maybe Jace, you would play Jace, Ed, and Theo all together.
Oh, interesting. Maybe that's what we're going for.
All right. Well, that's interesting. Maybe that's where I look forward to Ben's deep dive into water in a basketball. So watch for Anonymous Eagle for that. But that's going to do it for us here on Scrambled Eggs. As always, we appreciate your feedback. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm JoeMcCann3. Phil is M0OF23. Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. We have a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page. You can leave comments there. Go to cracksidewalks.com. You can leave your comments there. If you're not a social media person, you can follow it there. We post the podcast there. And also be sure to go to Apple Podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. Final thoughts, Phil?
Nope. Summer's coming to a close. It's time to start focusing on Marquette. So a couple of podcasts coming up pretty soon here, I think.
All right. Well, until then, seashells and balloons, everybody.